just like every other kid in the hood. Like, last time this boy cried, we woke up one morning, realized he was a fatherless child. Daddy never there, showed him no love, learned to emulate thugs, bust slugs with the intent to kill. Ran these streets, hide in a cable bill. Paranoid because these streets are stressing him. His motto, ain't nobody getting the best of him. Around these parts, drug wars make the guns spark. Triggers ain't got no heart. Women are hoes, kids are the way God. That's just the word in the Bible. They pray for death on their rivals. Out here, nobody cares. You can smell genocide in the air. From the corners, the kids gave birth to crackheads and chicken heads. They were misled by some fathers' old heads. They learned to cop reek, work off the reekers. They went to war with the dreads. Better off dead, it was this old lady said. She spoke truth to power. His darkest hour, they closed his casket at 19. Rest in peace, t-shirts, laced his whole team. His mother crying, dressed in black. Searched the church, front to back. Even on this day, a daddy he lacked. You're a self-exiled monarch from your Catholic home, making you a king without a throne, making your son a prince without a crown. Look at him now, he lived and died a fatherless child. And this must be supported karma. Like Sonia Sanchez being my father's baby mama. So you see my dad thanking for me for giving me this gift indirectly. Top 5 dead alive wordsmith in hip-hop, R&B, or poetry. So if you think you'll outright me, forget it. You can take that to heart like God said. Maybe when I'm going to give me credit, but right now, I'm that boy you want that boy. I'm like Langston Hughes on steroids. Alonzo and Shop, a little girl, little boy. Better father than my daddy ever was. And if poetry was a drug every day, I'd be taking it in the head and blowing the bag. And seeping out my soul to you. Sit next to me, might catch a contact. But I wish poetry was a female. So I can dive in face first. Put my mouth where she gives birth. Grab her by hair, slap on the backside, and ask her, whose poetry is this? She say it's yours, daddy. And 9 months later, she'll make me happy. Give me 2 miracles. I name one wordplay, the other lyrical. Just so I can walk up to people and say, did you see my lyrical wordplay? Never had a daddy, but I always had poetry. So I gotta thank God for giving me this literary style. And maybe this makes us even. For me growing up, a fatherless child.
We're having a technical difficulty.
Okay, you're live on the air and you have callers on the line.
Jacqueline, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, because we have technical difficulties on our end.
Okay.
We want to welcome you to the line. I'm your host, Mrs. Rashida Jabbar, and we have our co-host. Introduce yourselves.
Hello, everyone. My name is Abdul Porter, and I'm your co-host for tonight.
And my name is Zion Porter, and I'm your co-host for tonight.
And today, this evening, we have a wonderful show in store for everyone today. This evening, we have a very special, special guest with us this evening, Ms. Eugene J. Richardson, Jr., and he's from the 99th Squadron of the Tuskegee Airmen. And we want to go right into our interview because we're starting a little late today. So we want to check to see if Mr. Richardson is on the phone.
Yes, I'm on the phone.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Mr. Barr, pleasure being on.
You have to excuse us, Mr. Richardson. We're having a little technical difficulties on my end. So if you can't hear us, just let us know, okay?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. What we're going to do, we're going to start, first of all, to welcome you and thank you for joining us here on the flip side. And I just want the listening audience to know that I met Mr. Richardson just a couple of days ago. Matter of fact, at a supermarket going shopping for my grandsons, and I saw Mr. Richardson and a couple of other gentlemen sitting at the front, and they had a whole lot of literature that caught my curiosity, also to see the distinguished gentlemen that they were dressed in their uniforms, and so I began to ask questions and find out that they were with the Tuskegee Airmen, and someone being at the age of 50 And being a history buff, of course, I was very excited to meet you, Mr. Richardson, and wanted to know more about you and wanted my grandsons and all the young people that are listening this evening to know a little more about history of the Tuskegee Airmen and the impact that you all have had on African Americans and our role in history as far as in the military. So in doing so, we also want to let our listening audience know that we do have young people from Zion and Abdul School that is on the line waiting as well, and with Global Leadership Academy, and they are very anxious to get right into asking the questions with Mr. Richardson as well. So we're going to get started with our co-host this evening. Young men, take it away.
Hello, Mr. Richardson.
Hello.
My name is Diane Porter.
Diane? Did you say Diane?
Diane.
Diane.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, Diane, I'm Dr. Richardson.
Oh. Okay.
Okay, you didn't know. You didn't know. Just for your audience's benefit, I'm Dr. Richardson. I have a doctor's degree in education from the Pennsylvania State University.
Dr. Richardson, it's nice to have you on our show today.
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure being on.
Yes. I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
Can I please ask them?
Yes. Go ahead.
Where did the name Tuskegee Airmen come from, and who were Tuskegee Airmen, and where were they from?
Okay. During World War II, the only place where black men could be trained to be pilots for the Army Air Corps was at Tuskegee, Alabama. Tuskegee Institute had the primary training program, but then there was an Army airfield at the town of Tuskegee called Tuskegee Army Airfield. And we took the name Tuskegee Airmen because all of us were trained at Tuskegee. And, of course, as I said, Tuskegee is a small town in Alabama and not too far from Montgomery. As a matter of fact, the institute, the school, was established in 1881 for the education of black youth shortly after slavery. And it was established by a man named Booker T. Washington.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You all know who Booker T. was.
That's fascinating, Dr. Richardson. I have another question for you.
Sure.
We read that you were in the 99th Squadron in the Tuskegee Air Force.
Yes. Yes.
When did the 99th Squadron start their first mission?
Well, the 99th Squadron had their assignment to go to North Africa in, I think it was like May of 1943. And they went to North Africa.
Oh.
And, of course, you might know that Hitler had conquered North Africa. And, of course, the Americans and the British were there to drive the Germans away from Africa. And the 99th Squadron was a part of that effort.
Okay, that was interesting.
You want to ask yours next? Now you have Abdul wants to ask you a question. They really get, they smile about this. This is really interesting for them.
Okay, Abdul, fire away.
Hello, Dr. Richardson.
Hello.
My first question for you is, who was Mr. Benjamin O. Davis, and did you fly with him?
Benjamin O. Davis, Jr. was the commander of the pilots, the squadrons of pilots. An interesting thing about Benjamin O. Davis, Jr., and I say Jr. because his father was the first black man to be elevated to the rank of general in the United States Army. So Benjamin Davis, Jr., went to West Point in 1932. He finished in 1936 at the top 13% of his class. Even though they tried to force him to quit, he stuck with it and finished in the top 13% of the graduating class in 1936. He went to Tuskegee, and he was in the first class of pilots that were graduated from the advanced flying school at Tuskegee. That first class had five graduates. They started out with 13 guys, but five graduated. And Benjamin Davis Jr. was placed in command of the black pilots that flew combat over in Europe, starting in North Africa, and then they moved all the way up to Italy. And Benjamin Davis Jr. retired as a three-star general, and President Clinton gave him a fourth star, which he should have earned, which he should have received before his retirement. So Benjamin Davis Jr. retired as a four-star general, and he was the commander of the black pilots in combat in World War II. There were four squadrons. We talked about Squadron 99. That was the first squadron to go over. But then there was Squadron 100, Squadron 301, and Squadron 302. Those four squadrons together were known as the 332nd Fighter Group. And Benjamin Davis Jr. was the commander of that group. Okay.
He had all the squadrons together, and he was overseeing basically a whole four groups of basically military
pilots.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Four squadrons of military pilots.
All told, there were
close to 400 black pilots in those four squadrons that flew in combat in Europe.
Wow. Okay, Abdul. Good question. Good question. Go ahead.
Number two, we know that there were no blacks in the Army Air Force before 1941. So I accept it. How did you feel? And what were some of the difficulties you faced as an African-American man in the service?
Well, first of all, at the time of World War II, the military was rigidly segregated by race. Black soldiers and white service soldiers were never together. Black officers never commanded white soldiers. The Army didn't think that blacks had the intelligence to be pilots. So we have to sue the Army. There was a lawsuit by a pilot and the NAACP, a lawsuit against the Army to admit black men as pilots. With that lawsuit, the Army said, okay, we'll have Squadron 99. But it was segregated all through the war. Well, primarily, for most of the time they were during the war, they were segregated. The 99th Squadron was transferred from group to group. They were first with the 33rd Group, then they were with the 622nd Group, and then they were with the 729th Group. Now, with the 729th Group, that commander was an intelligent guy, and he did not separate the black pilots from the white pilots. But when the 332nd Group went over, they put the 99th with them, so once again, all the black pilots were together. Now, during the war, we were not known as Tuskegee Airmen. During the war, we were known by the squadron that we were in, either 99, 100, 301, or 302. In 1975, now, though, keep in mind, the war ended in 1945. In 1975, the guys got together and decided to form a veterans group. And they selected the name Tuskegee Airmen as the name for their veterans group. And I'm sorry, I said 70. That was 1972. They selected the name of Tuskegee Airmen for the veterans group because all the black pilots had been trained at Tuskegee. But during the war, we were known by the squadron number. Does that help?
Yes. And what we want to do, we have callers on the line as well, and we want to get some of the students on because I know that they're waiting and I hear them beeping. So we just want to get one of the young people on. Jacqueline, we want to see if Camilla or Jamal is on the line yet.
Yes, Camilla's online.
Hi, Camilla.
Hi.
Welcome to the flip side. Abdul and Shahid, welcome your guests.
Hello, Camilla. Welcome to the flip side. I hope you know what happened so far. Welcome, Camilla. Oh,
hi.
Hi, that you're on the flip side. Do you have any questions for Mr. Richardson, Camilla?
Dr. Richardson? Yes, I do. My name is Camilla.
Good evening, Camilla. Yes, good evening.
And I wanted to ask you a couple questions.
Okay.
Is your dream to stay a pilot or not?
Is it my dream to stay a pilot?
Yes.
Well, I'm 86 years old, dear, so that was a wonderful experience for me, but I'm no longer flying. However, my son is a captain with American Airlines, and he's still flying. And, of course, I get a great thrill just knowing that my son is flying one of those big airplanes up there with a couple hundred passengers in it. So I do my flying through him vicariously.
Okay, my second question was, what age did you begin doing this?
Well, I entered service when I was 18. I soloed, that is, a solo means flying by yourself. I soloed when I was 18, and I finished the flight school and got my wings and officer's commission when I was 19. So that was a great time for a young age. Hmm?
Did you enjoy it?
Oh, I loved it. I wanted to fly since I was about 5 years old. I saw an air circus put on by black pilots in 1931 when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And that just was such a thrilling thing to see, and I felt that, hey, I got to be a pilot. So from the time I was a little kid, I'd always dreamed about flying and did a lot of things that pretending to fly, made a lot of model airplanes, read a lot of books about flying, pretended to take flying lessons, all that stuff was quite thrilling for me.
And my last question was, when you wore the thing that you had to wear, did you feel uncomfortable?
Well, sometimes because, we were flying in the south during the summertime. It gets quite hot during the summer. Of course, an airplane is quite hot inside if you're down low. The higher up you go, the colder it gets. But in the summertime, we were flying at medium altitude. Yes, it was quite warm. You did sweat a lot. But even in the hot summertime, the hottest day in the summertime, if you go up to like 30,000 feet, the temperature is below zero.
Oh.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Camilla, thank you so much for that question. But Zion has a question for you, Camilla, because what we do here on the flip side is mainly geared towards educating our young people. And we want to find out, Zion is going to ask you, what did you get out of the conversation with Dr. Richardson? Go ahead, Zion. You can ask it.
Camilla.
Yes?
What did you learn when you were talking to Dr. Richardson?
What was your question?
Camilla, what did you learn when you were talking to Dr. Richardson?
I learned that he wanted to be a pilot when he was since he was 5, and he began doing it at 18, and I also learned that he loves his job very much.
That's good, Camilla. Anything else, guys? Well, Camilla, we want you to still listen in because you can feel free to stay on the line and listen. And if there's any other questions that you would like to ask as you learn more about Dr. Richardson or you want to ask with Abdul and Zain before we leave at 9 o'clock, feel free to do so. Now we want to check to see if Jamil is on the phone. Jacqueline? Is Taekwon on the line? These are all young people from Global Leadership Academy. So, Jacqueline, if they call in again, please put them through. Just interrupt us because we want to get the young people on. They were very excited about the show. So I'm going to turn it back over to our host.
One moment, Rashida. Okay. Well, excuse me, host and Rashida. We do have several people on the line. I don't know if they're not announcing themselves. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, three other people outside of Camilla from the 215 area code.
And that may be the Global Leadership Academy students because they wanted to ask Dr. Richardson some questions. So, Jacqueline, what we're going to do, we're going to flip it a little bit because it is the flip side. We're going to let the young people come on. And Zain and Abdul have one more question to ask Dr. Richardson, but they'll ask that after the young people have asked their question. Is that okay with you guys?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Jacqueline, just pull them through, and we'll let our co-host bring them on. They introduce themselves, and they would direct them to ask Dr. Richardson any questions that they may have. So you can feel free to do that right now, Jacqueline, please.
Okay. From the 215-888. Who's that?
That's Camilla.
Okay. Then from the 215-514.
514.
I don't know if they're still on them. No, they should be. 215-514. Can you hear us?
Go ahead.
We also have the 215-359.
Yes, Rhoda Muhammad.
Okay, good evening. What is your name again?
Rhoda Muhammad.
Okay. Abdul and them, they're smiling. They know you. So they're going to go in. Young men, you want to start and say greet your guests?
Welcome, Rhoda, to the flip side.
Welcome, thank you.
Welcome, Rhoda.
Thank you
for having me.
Now, ask Rhoda, is there a question that she would like to address to Dr. Richardson? Your turn.
Is there any questions you would like to say to Dr. Richardson? Why is he alive?
Yes. Yes, I have, like, about three questions I can ask.
Okay.
Well, my first question is, what would you have been if your career goal wasn't to be a pilot?
Well, I went to vocational school to be a wood pattern maker. In those days, things that were cast in iron, four things that were cast in iron, you first made a wooden pattern of that particular thing. And then it was put in a sand mold, and melted iron was poured into the mold form, and then you would get an iron copy of the wooden pattern that you made. So I was studying a wood pattern maker.
Oh, so you would have been a wooden pattern maker. Interesting.
Wood they do that stuff by computer now, so that trade no longer, very few people still in that trade. It's done by computers now.
Okay. What don't you enjoy about your job?
Well, I'm retired now, but when I was flying, I enjoyed everything.
We want our listening audience to know that Dr. Richardson, he is a retired Air Force, with the Tuskegee Airmen. So he is retired, so he's not flying anymore.
Right. Uh-huh.
Oh, I'm sorry. So let me...
That's okay.
It was fun. It was a wonderful time. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Uh-huh.
Where what did you experience when you were flying from your whole adventure or journey?
Well, you know, being up in the air, where you can look over and see miles and miles around you, it just gives you the feeling of being, you know, so free. And with military flying, you know, you climb fast, you make a lot of turns, and you can, you know, dive down like birds and circle around. And it's just a lot of fun. Now, of course, you're trained to fight in a war. And, of course, that part of it, I didn't care so much for, but that's what I volunteered for, and that's what I trained for. So during the time of war, you have to do some things that you really don't like. But that's
my
part of your job, huh?
And my last question for you is, if you have children, what are your future plans for them?
Well, I have a son. My son's grown now. Let me talk about my grandchildren. I have two granddaughters. I have two granddaughters, and they're still in school. They're both interested in gymnastics. So if they want to be competitors in gymnastics meets, I wish them all kinds of success. And they're excellent students. Along with their regular classwork, they do something called Kumon, which is another way of learning math and reading. So for them, I want them to be successful gymnasts along with their schoolwork.
Thank you, Dr. Richardson.
Okay.
Thank you, Rhoda, for coming in and speaking to Dr. Richardson.
Yes,
no
thank
problem.
You for coming on the flip side.
No problem. I enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. And we want our listening audience to know that you're listening to our future leaders from Global Leadership Academy Charter School, a phenomenal school, as you can hear, with excellent, excellent scholars, young people that are really aiming for success. And as you can tell from the questions that they're asking Dr. Richardson, that these young people are really on the ball. And I want to commend them for calling in and wanting to be a part of this and wanting to know the history of American men and in the service. And I thank Dr. Richardson as well for taking the time out with us. Now, Jacqueline, do we have another caller? Expecting one more, Jamal and Taquan. Are they on yet? Taquan. Jacqueline? Mr. Richard? Okay. Jacqueline, tell Adam. I think we done lost the signal.
Mr. Barr?
Yes, I'm sorry. We couldn't hear you.
This is Kamala. I wanted to ask Dr. Richardson if I could ask him one more question.
Oh, sure. Go right ahead.
What inspired you to become a pilot?
Well, I saw an air circus put on by colored pilots when I was a young boy. I saw this air circus. There are like five airplanes up in the sky, and they were doing, you know, turns and climbs and dives just like birds, playing around the clouds and so forth. And they landed, and people got out of those things, and that was the most thrilling sight to me. And that gave me the notion, hey, I want to fly an airplane like those people are flying. So that's what did it.
That's exciting. That's really
mm-hmm.
exciting. Yeah, my father was in the Air Force, so that's pretty exciting. Is there any more questions that you would like to ask, Camilla? You can ask one more before we go into the second half segment of our show, or you can stay on and listen because we're still looking for two more callers from Global Leadership Academy.
This is
and
Sarah.
We want our listening. Go ahead.
Oh, this is Tiffany.
Global Leadership Academy.
Hello, Tiffany.
Hi. I have two questions for you. Did you feel discriminated or felt any type of anger when racism was brought upon the Tuskegee Airmen?
Well, yes, there was considerable racism. After all, the military was rigidly segregated, so the military itself at that time sort of sponsored, discrimination. And you felt disrespected. When you would salute a white officer, sometimes they would not return your salute. Or sometimes white enlisted men would not salute a black officer. And, of course, that was against military customs, but it was also demeaning because you knew they were doing it because of your skin color. And, yes, it was. I had to ride on the back of a bus under force of being arrested or beaten up in a dining car when I was in uniform as an officer. They pulled a curtain in front of me to segregate me from the white passengers in the dining car. Now, those things were hurtful, but you learn to deal with it because you realize that, well, that's the custom down in the South, and you learn to deal with it, and you conducted yourself in such a way that you did not run into trouble. So you sort of had to go along with those customs just to keep from being beaten up or put in jail or some other nonsense.
I'm very happy
that things are different now.
Yes, very different.
I have one more question. Your entire career, if you could go back and change anything, what exactly would that be?
Well, if I could go way back then, I would change the racism that existed in the military, because that kept a lot of black people from advancing, and I would change that. But everything else went well.
I am sorry that you had to go through that.
Well, we went through it, said we proved one of the things that the Tuskegee Airmen did. Tuskegee Airmen actually changed the country because they proved to the military that black men did have the intelligence and the coordination and the all the other attributes that were needed to be successful military pilots, because we set some records, records that were better than the white pilots. So by setting those records, President Truman in 1948 issued an order ending segregation in the military. And that was done because of the fantastic record that was set by Tuskegee Airmen. And our Congressional Gold Medal has that written on the back of it. Quite a time.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's...
Well, thank you.
Oh, it's quite all right. Thank you for the call.
Wow, that was some really wonderful questions from Tiffany. And I liked when Tiffany said, oh, wow, I'm sorry you had to go through that. I guess now when young people, Dr. Richardson, hears about what the elders had to go through back in the days in the 50s and 40s and 60s, that it's pretty hard for them to conceive that racism, that people can hate you just for the color of your skin or because that you're an African-American male. You know, they don't see the racism or experience it in the way that you all, even myself, I'm 50, experienced it back when I was in Mississippi. It's a little different, so it's kind of hard for them to comprehend. So they do feel sad and sorrow because these are babies. They're 10, 11, and 12, and what's in their heart is, you know what I mean? It's kindness and love and loving one another. So it's good for them to hear history from actually someone that was actually there and to experience the actual racism so they can really appreciate the things that you all went through, the things that my grandmothers and my grandfathers, even my father went through at the time because he was in the Air Force, the segregation, that they things have changed and they have to reach back and go into history in order to move forward to where they're going to be productive African-American males and females in society. So this right here, I must say again that I really appreciate you coming on and sharing this with our young people, sharing the history of what was then and the greatness of it, because beyond the sadness, there was really some greatness. Even what you're telling us this evening, things I didn't know about, there's greatness in that. It shows courage. It shows determination. It shows success and leadership. All those qualities that we try to teach our young people now, you actually showed us. If you put those things in its proper perspective and really try to reach for success, you can really make some wonderful history. Just the small things and teaming together what these young people are doing now by them calling in, supporting one another in the school, supporting Abdul and Zayn with the talk show. That is a form of leadership. And I just wanted to bring it up to thank the young people and yourself. We want to make sure that I don't forget anyone because Abdul and them, they want to get to these last questions. But the callers, we want to make sure that we got all the callers on. So, Jacqueline, can you do one more check for me, please? Okay, so we don't have another caller. We must have met. I know that Taekwon called on my phone, so we're going to get back to Zayn with his last question. Then we're going to get back to Abdul with his last question, and then it would be 9 o'clock, and we're going to close it out, but I don't want anyone to hang up because we have phenomenal Mary Pat Hector. If you all remember Mary Pat, she is our young activist. At the age of Mary Pat is 13, and she's doing a ceasefire, 90-day ceasefire all across the country. This little girl is old, and we want to make sure that everyone listens in so we can support Mary Pat, and she's going to be calling in at exactly at 9 o'clock. Okay? So, Zayn, you want to take your next question?
Yes. Dr. Richardson.
Yes.
You still feel that you have helped David the way for interrogation of the Army Air Corps known as the Air Force?
Repeat that.
Say that again, please.
Dr. Richardson, do you feel that you have helped David
pave
the way for
integration
of the Army Air Corps known as the Air Force?
Yeah, I certainly do. Because Tuskegee Airmen, that is, black pilots during World War II, did fantastically well in combat. And they proved that we were not inferior people. And because of that, President Truman desegregated the military. And that desegregation ball started rolling throughout our society. And there were a number of changes made in our society afterward as a result of desegregating the Army. And it reached the point where we now have a black president. And incidentally, when President Obama was inaugurated, he issued two invitations to his inauguration. One of those invitations went to Tuskegee Airmen because he said he stands on the shoulders of Tuskegee Airmen in reaching his present position. So I certainly feel as though we made a great contribution to toward integration. Yes.
You did.
Mrs. Jabbar?
Yes.
Can I ask one last question?
Sure, you can. Who am I speaking with?
This is Rhoda.
Okay, Rhoda, sure.
Well, after I heard everyone's questions and Dr. Richardson's answers, I just like add one last question for him. And it was, do you have any advice for us leaders and students to become like
successful as you are now?
Well, the most important thing is education. The better educated you are, the better will be your chances of making a contribution to society and having successful lives. The most important thing is to gain as much knowledge and as much education as you can cram in. There are a lot of distractions out there, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of people try to get you to go in a different direction. But you have to ignore those people and do what you know is the proper thing for you, to, so that you can gain the greatest amount of knowledge and the greatest amount of education. That will be your key.
Thank you.
Okay, sure.
That was good. Okay, Abdul.
My last question to you, Mr. Dr. Davidson. Richardson. Sorry. What happened during the segregation of the training facilities in Tuskegee, Alabama? And why didn't anyone want the 99th Squadron in their group?
Why didn't they? Well, first of all, it was racism. And what racism was the reason why they didn't want the 99th Squadron in their group. They had the notion that black people were inferior, and they didn't want to associate with inferior people. So they didn't want the 99th at first because of their mistaken notions about black people. But once they saw what great pilots black guys were, then they started asking for black pilots to work with them. Incidentally, there's a movie on January 20th, George Lucas will release a movie titled Red Tails. That movie is about the black pilots because the tails of our airplanes were painted red. So the movie Red Tails, coming out in January, is about Tuskegee Airmen. So make every effort to see that movie, and it might explain a lot of these things to you.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Richardson.
Okay.
Wow. And before you go, sir,
yes.
I just want to read off something that the boys wanted to share with the listening audience about you. And that being said is that, of course, we spoke about Dr. Richardson, Dr. Eugene J. Richardson, Jr., with the 99th Squadron, Tuskegee Airmen. And the 99th Squadron distinguished itself by being awarded two presidential unit citations, June yes. through July of 1943 and May of 1944. For outstanding technical air support and aerial combat in the 12th Air Force in Italy before joining the 33rd Fighter Group. Now, the information that I pulled up on you is quoting one of the things that you said, Dr. Richardson, is it's close that you were a pilot, and you also were accompanied with a crew chief by the name of Eddie Moore at a venue
Moore.
That you were invited to in reference to the veterans. And you spoke about the World War II and the battle against Nazism and racism. And that was one of the key things that you said. And it quotes you here saying that Dr. Eugene J. Richardson, Jr. Speaks on your plight with the 99th Fighter Squadron and the Tuskegee Airmen. And you also contributed to that as being a bitter fight against racism.
Yeah.
And I bring that up to say that if it had not been for men such as yourself and the Tuskegee Airmen that our service, our Air Force, our government agencies that we are now endowed in, as you mentioned, we have our first African-American president. And we want to say to you, Dr. Eugene J. Richardson, Jr., and I say your whole name because I want everyone to know who you are, that I thank you, I appreciate you, and for brothers like you and men like you are the reason that helps, gives us ammunition and gives us strength so I can do what I do as a grandmother, raising my grandsons with examples such as yours. So I am so honored and blessed that I met you and that you are a true man of your word, that you took the time out to speak to the young people and to educate them and to give them words of encouragement. So to you and your family, may God bless you. To all the Tuskegee Airmen, from my family to yours, we thank you. And as African-American female raising boys, I commend you. I appreciate you. You will never be forgotten. And we love you, Dr. Eugene J. Richardson, Jr., and all the men of the Tuskegee Air Force. And we want you to close us out, Dr. Richardson, with any last words that you have for our young people, for us as African-Americans, anything that you would like to say in these next 5 minutes. We're going to turn the floor over to you, sir.
Well, I'd like to let young people know that their creator gave them all of the skills and all of the courage and all of what is necessary to be successful in the world. We just have to make use. We just have to believe in ourselves. You have to believe in yourself and make use of the skills and the abilities that you were born with. We all have a genius within us. And it's up to us to believe in ourselves and find this genius within and make use of it. There are a lot of different types of intelligence. And it's not all just book intelligence. There are all kinds of mechanical intelligences, artistic intelligences. There are all kinds of intelligences, and we have it. But you have to look within yourself to find that and then build on it. And one of the best ways to do that is through as much education as you can acquire. And don't let anyone tell you that you're dumb or you're stupid or you're no count or you don't mean anything or you don't count. Don't listen to that kind of nonsense. Understand that your Creator gave you all kinds of wonderful abilities, and it's just up to you to use them. People that say negative things to you, walk away from them. So-called friends that want you to do negative things, walk away from them. A friend will want you to make the best of your life, and you can't do it if you're listening to negative things or doing negative things. That's my message.
Mr. Barr?
Yes?
Can I ask him one more question?
Okay, you got 1 minute, so you got to make it quick, okay? Go ahead.
Okay. Do you think that we black people are being treated fair today?
Not as bad as it was before. Things have been far, far worse. Understand that if most white people were against us, we would be in terrible shape. Most white people are for us in a positive way. And things are not perfect, but they're much, much better than they were. And don't think that a whole lot of people are against you. Actually, we are our own worst enemy because we don't believe in ourselves and we don't stick together the way we should. So I think we cause ourselves more trouble than other people cause us.
That was a good question.
Uh-huh.
Wow. Well, our listening audience, we're going to have to wrap up. Hate to go, but we're going to want you to stay with us because we have, as I said, we have Mary Pat Hector, a young 13-year-old activist who is doing some phenomenal work. But we're ready to close out, and we want to, I'm going to turn this last minute for our co-hosts, Abdul and Diane, to thank our guest, Dr. Richardson, and to thank the members of Global Leadership Academy for calling. Abdul?
Well, I'd like to thank Camilla, Rhoda, Dr. Richardson. You all have some great, you all have some great questions, some great answers, and I'll see Camilla and Rhoda and the rest of my fellow scholars, students, peers in school tomorrow, and bye, Dr. Richardson.
Okay, the best to you.
Go ahead, Diane.
Thanks for the opportunity to be on.
There were very great questions, Camilla, Rhoda, Dr. Richardson. I like your answers. You too, Camilla. I'm happy you guys have been able to get on the talk show.
Okay, I'll say good night to you.
No problem.
Okay, good night. Our listening audience, we want you all to hang in there. Dr. Richardson, I thank you again. We want to make sure that we get Dr. Richardson along with some other Tuskegee Airmen on the airwave to talk to us. We're going to invite you back on again, but I'm also going to send you an email to give you an update of what the young boys are doing so you can keep in touch with them. Once again, we love you, Dr. Richardson, and we thank you so much. We appreciate you, and you have a safe and prosperous weekend. Okay, Jacqueline Taylor Adams, we want to have Abdul and Zion close out, but we want them to be able to say hi to Mary Pat Hector before they go, because they're excited to say hi to her. Is she on the line yet? Okay, while we're waiting for Jacqueline and Mary Pat Hector to get on the line with us, we're going to wrap this up with Abdul and Zion for any last words that you guys would like to share with your listening audience to let them know how important it is that they support you guys and listen to your show. Who wants to give that while we're waiting for Mary? Zion?
This is for everyone. For the young men and young women, stay in school, stay in high school, stay in college. Get a good job and follow your dreams. Don't ever quit. Don't ever stop whatever you're trying to do. Well, you know, there's lots of black people that have lots of sayings. I don't know any of those right now. But most of them are encouraging ones, and you should listen to them. Stay in school, and you will see, you will.
It's okay.
Stay in school, and you get all your degrees. You may get better than the job. You may get a career.
Wonderful.
So black with success.
Wonderful. And since we're talking about that while we're waiting, because you guys can't leave me now, because you're going to leave me all by myself. So we gotta wait for Mary Pat Hector to get on the line, and any other callers that may want to tune in. But since we're talking about success, this is something we don't get the chance to do in our last half an hour because I send you off to get ready for school the next day. So I just want you to answer this one question for me. To you, Abdul, how do you define success? What is success to you and for you?
Well, success to me is when you get all your work done, you complete what you have to do. It's mainly you doing what you have to do and then completing it and, like, doing it right. That's what success means to me.
Okay. So success, so basically you're saying that it means to you setting a goal.
Yeah.
Going after the goal and not just starting the goal, but fulfilling it out, completing it all the way through, following up.
Finishing what you started.
Okay, great. Great, that is great. High five. Okay, Zion.
Success to me is enhancement.
Wow.
Not just your own success. You can do more than just one success. You can succeed more goals. Like, first follow your own goal, then follow another goal. Stack it up. You gotta enhance your success. Don't worry just about one success. Worry about all your successes if you want to do more in life. If like enhancing ability.
Enhancing ability. And how old are you?
11.
Okay. So what you're saying is that instead of just reaching, having one thing set, now correct me if I'm putting things in your mouth, I know that you want to be a scientist. But I also know that you also want to engage in soccer, other careers that you have. But I know that one of your main things is to be an astronaut, okay? So is that what you mean, stacking it up? Don't just say, okay, this is one goal that I have. Now I have a few of them, so I'm going to reach for those a little harder?
Yes.
That's what you're saying. Okay. Okay. Well, fellas, this was great sitting and chatting with you. You got like 2 minutes. Is there anything else that you want to discuss? You want to talk about? How do you really feel about the talk show? Are you excited about the flip side?
Yes.
Is it helping? I mean, to have all these wonderful guests on, you done had, just had Dr. Eugene J. Richardson Jr. From the Tuskegee Airmen. You had Mr. Ted Sutton from the Sutton House, and he was one of the characters The Wire was written about. Brother Nasir from Stop the Violence, Stop the Madness. You had Yumi Odom from Fractur Hui Institute. And who else? Brother Umar Abdullah Johnson, the renowned psychologist. Okay, you mentioned Mary Pat. You really want to talk to Mary Pat, okay? And that right there, you guys are doing some wonderful things. To have those type of guests on and the phenomenal questions that you all ask them, I just want the listening audience to know that I am so proud of you. I commend you for what you do. Even sometimes we get off of a little rough start trying to get the questions together, you guys. But you always come through like true champions and true leaders that you are. And once again, I give shout-outs to Global Leadership Academy for the excellent job that they're doing as being the extended caregivers of our children. And that would be to all the teachers. But I must give a special shout-out to Ms. Simmons, to Mr. Wiles, and they are your two teachers, and Mr. Choice, Ms. Evans, and Mr. Walker, Ms. Applegate. Go ahead.
Dr. Booker.
Anyone else that you all want to give a shout-out to in your class, your school?
And I got a shout-out for everyone in the school, students, teachers.
Okay.
And
especially the 8th grade girls.
The 8th grade girls, too?
I would like to give a shout-out to Ms. Tyler.
Ms. Tyler? She's
yeah.
an excellent teacher. I love Ms. Tyler. And Global Leadership, how long have you been in Global Leadership Academy?
Who, me?
Yes.
2 years.
2 years, and how has it helped you? Is it better than the schools that
I
you were previously in?
Yes, but I said 2 years.
2 years?
Yes.
And do you find it to be a wonderful school?
I love it.
Love it? I love it, too. I love it, too. Great. So we give a clap to Global Leadership Academy Charter School. They're awesome. And Jacqueline, we're trying to see if Mary Pat is on the phone. Is she calling yet? Okay, I'm not getting any response from Jacqueline Taylor Adams. Okay, you will give your shout-out.
I'd like to give a shout-out to Mrs. Beer and Ms. Golish Academy. She runs the Academics Plus, both reading and math. She's pretty much fun, and she gives the lessons and stuff, so I'd just like to give a shout-out to her.
And we also want to let the young people know from Global Leadership Academy that you're more than welcome to be a part of the flip side, because the flip side is designed for young people such as yourself. It is geared towards black male achievement, and we all know that if black men achieve in society, then of course the women will achieve as well and succeed, because it takes all of us. It takes a village. It takes a village to make these things work. And education, as Dr. Richardson explained, that it is the key to success. It is very important. There was a time when African Americans could not be educated, you know, in the schools. So you all have to take advantage of the school system, take advantage of opportunities that Dr. Richardson and men such as himself has paved the way for you all to have education, to be in the military, to be in government jobs, and to do different things that you all do. So we have to recognize the elderly and our seniors. I hate to call them elderly, but our seniors before us. And as Dr. Richardson expressed, that all we have to make this clear that our Caucasians, and we say white people, but I like to call it white Caucasians, are not the bad people. There are those that fought side by side and died side by side so that we would have the freedom and the liberties that we experience now as well. Okay? We're going
to
let you all get ready to go to bed because get ready for school tomorrow. And what I do in this next half of the segment is that I do a dialogue where we speak about issues that are facing our community and young people. You're more than welcome to stay on the line. For the next 15 minutes, I thought I was going to have Mary Pet Hector on the phone because she was going to talk about her 90-day ceasefire.
Excuse me. I'm so sorry. I have been having crazy problems. I actually had to come to a whole other house in order to get back in.
I wonder what happened here.
Yeah, I know. I kept hearing you, but I couldn't answer you because I couldn't access the studio. But I just opened up. Mary Pat is on the line, and another person from 215-305 is on the line.
Okay, let's get the. I think that's Taquan on 305. Can you put that 305 through? And Mary Pat, just hold on 1 second for me while we get this last caller off. Caller? Hello?
Hello?
Who are we speaking with?
Taquan.
Hey, Taquan.
Can you speak up, please?
We can't hardly hear you, Taquan.
Hi,
Taquan. This is my nephew, everyone, Taquan, and he goes to Global Leadership Academy as well. Taquan, we tried to get you on when Dr. Richardson from the Tuskegee Airmen was the one, but I know you had some questions for him, but you can feel free to say what you want to say now because he's off the line, but we're going to get him back on because I knew you wanted to call and I kept waiting for you, so we do apologize for that, but we're glad to have you on now. So we're going to let Zion and Shahid, maybe they would have a question for you, and we want you to hold on because I want you to hear Mary Pat Hector. She's only 13, and she's a community activist that you guys need to hear and talk to her. So, Zion, you want to welcome your cousin to the flip side?
Hello. Taquan.
Say hello.
Hello, Taquan.
Ask him if there's any questions he had to ask.
Yeah, have any questions you want to ask?
Why did he become a pilot?
We couldn't hear you, Taquan.
You got to speak up louder.
Why did the Tuskegee Airman become a pilot?
Why did he become a pilot? He gave that answer. Good question. Let's see if Diane and Abdul were listening to why he became a pilot. Okay, Abdul said he has the answer.
He said when he was about 5 years old, he went to a circus and it was put on like while a few black men, they were flying some planes up in the air and they would jump out and they would just, like, fly around, dive, and do tricks on planes. So that inspired them, and that was me who wanted to become an airman.
Good. Did I answer your question, Taquan?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have another one? That was a good question.
How old was he when he retired from being a pilot?
Oh, wow, that's a good question. Did we get the age of how old he was? I think Zion has it. How old when he retired? Zion said he think he was 70. 78? I don't think so.
No, I remember. It said it in the book.
It's in the book.
he was about 59 when he retired.
But Taquan, I'm not really sure because I kind of like let that one slip by me. But we can get that information because I can get that from him again, okay? And I can make sure that we have that information for you on the next show, okay?
Okay.
Good. So how are you doing in school? How do you like Global Leadership Academy?
I like that school.
You like it? This is your first year there. Right?
Second year?
So you at the different, you at the new school now. You like the new school?
Yep.
That's good, Taquan. Now, Taquan, you hold on 1 second because we want to bring on Mary Pat Hector because there may be a question that you may want to ask her, so don't hang up, okay?
Okay.
Mary Pat Hector.
Yes?
Hi, sweetie. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Wait a minute.
Hello?
Mary?
Yes?
Okay, sorry about that. We're just having some technical difficulties, but when you're on the flip side, anything is liable to happen. And we want to first, Abdul and Zion, you want to say hi to Mary Pat?
I'm Miss Mary Pat Hector.
Hi.
I'm Miss Mary Pat Hector. We had you before, and it was excellent.
I'm Miss Mary Pat Hector.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the flip side. She
Mary Pat. She's 13. It's nice that you want to give her Miss, and you can give her those accolades. Mary Pat, what I want, I called you this evening because I really wanted you to be on the last part of the segment because there's something, I received information from Jacqueline Taylor Adams in reference to something phenomenal that you're doing, but I needed to know more details so I can share with our listening audience and as well as with my peers and partners. I know that it is a 90-day cease violence on November the 11th, 2011. Can you please first tell us a little about you and then tell us, the listening audience, what it is, this ceasefire, and how can they get involved, and what actually do we need to do as adults to support you young people in your efforts? So, Mary, Pat, you have the next 10 minutes where you're going to give us information about exactly what you're doing. And Jacqueline Taylor Adams, if there's any calls that come through that might want to ask Mary some questions, please put them through in these last few minutes. Okay, Mary, you can go ahead and tell us what about this 90-day cease violence.
Yes, it's called, well, quite actually, you know, one day I had this idea. My mentor, Tamika Mallory, she was talking to me about how much violence was happening in New York City. And I was explaining to her that it's not just happening in New York City, it's happening in Philadelphia, it's happening in Detroit, it's happening in Atlanta, and we have to do something to save, you know, my generation. So I decided to have a Shake Off the Violence campaign, and I was going to kick that off in Peace Week in January. But I started to think to myself, what are we going to do until then? We have to do something now. So I decided to have, well, we decided, Ethan actually decided to have a 90-day ceasefire, 90-day cease violence, and we were going to have a press conference in 12 different states, November the 11th, 2011, to encourage people to stop gossiping, to encouraging people to shake off violence in their lives. The reason why we chose 90 days is because we understand that when somebody does something for more than 30, 60 days, it becomes a habit. We want violence, we want people to start to shake off the violence and it become a habit. The reason that we want to have violence in our communities is because we want to, one, reduce the violence, promote peace, and improve, you know, people's communities. A lot of people feel like because violence doesn't happen in their community, they don't have to deal with it or they don't have to talk about it. The reason why I wanted to have this campaign is because I want people to know that it is their responsibility. We all have to talk about it, no matter if you're in a nice community or an urban community. We all have to talk about it because majority of the young people that are dying are the bystanders, the innocent bystanders, the star athletes, the honor roll students, we have to do something because innocent people are dying. Kids that really don't have a plan in life are dying, and we need to stop it. Eight kids every 3 hours are killed due to senseless violence. Violence is the second leading cause of death that affects teenagers. The second. And I believe that it's just time for us to stop violence, and that's what I came up with the 90-day ceasefire.
That is real, wow. That is really interesting. That is beautiful. And what type of support do you have? I know that you're with Youth in Action, and a lot of listeners don't know, so we want to give them a little history. You have chapters in what cities?
Oh, gosh. I can
all
name
over.
A few. Yeah,
all over,
but I can name a few. Detroit, Wisconsin, North Carolina, South Carolina, D.C., what else? Connecticut.
Do you have one in Philadelphia?
I believe so. I'm working with Miss Jacqueline now with the Philadelphia chapter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And,
if someone wanted to get involved from Philadelphia with the Youth in Action and with the campaign that you're doing now, how can they get in touch with you and the chapter leader here in Philadelphia? How would they be able to get in touch with you, and what would be the proper protocol? Is this going to be a phone call, a conference call that you all are doing? Is it going to be in person that you all are trying to get people to do the 90-day cease violence? How does this whole plan work? Is it something that you all can get on the phone and do? Or are you going to do webinars? Or can you just say a little more?
With the ceasefire, we're going to be doing a press conference talking about the ceasefire, talking about what we're going to do on November the 11th.
Okay.
If someone wanted to start a chapter, what they would do is normally people Facebook me or see me at events when I talk about Youth in Action or when I talk about National Action Network, and I talk to them about how they can get involved. When people from different states want to get involved, normally that's through Facebook. What I do is I continue to communicate with them, tell them what Youth in Action is. If they still want to get involved, I'll see how serious they are, and then I'll make a trip out to their city and help them start their chapter. With the Shake Off the Violence campaign, the 90-day ceasefire is included in our Shake Off the Violence campaign. When we're going to be doing PSAs, we're going to be doing an ad campaign, and we're also going to be doing community service projects with our Shake Off the Violence campaign. And we're going to be traveling to different cities. We're going to travel to Philadelphia. We're going to go to Detroit. We're going to go to New York City. We're going to have one in here in Atlanta. We're going to be doing, from what I know, 8 states. And hopefully we can continue to branch out and do more than 8 states. I soon want to have our Shake Off the Violence campaign in all 50 states.
Great. I think that you're doing some phenomenal work. And the boys were just telling me, they were giving me signals that they want to be a part of it. So you have two right sitting right here that wants to be a part of your initiative here in Philadelphia. So they're going to get in touch with Miss Jacqueline Taylor Adams to see what type of role that they can play in. And you can let Mary know this yourself. I don't have to speak for you guys. You can let her know.
No, you don't.
Go ahead.
We have to join. So do we have to go to a meeting on November 11th? For?
She just said she's going to have a conference. You're going to have a press conference. You're going to contact Miss Jacqueline Taylor Adams. And Jacqueline Taylor Adams here in Philly, she's going to give you the information that you need.
Okay.
Diane, any questions that you have for Mary? You were so excited to get Mary on the phone. He was, like, raising his hands up, Mary Pat. He was so excited. You really, really inspired him. And he wants to ask you a question. Diane does.
What was the biggest impact do you think you have done ever since you started?
Ever since I started Youth in Action?
Yes.
I mean, I don't think I've made a big enough impact to where I can even answer that question. A lot of people are like, oh, Mary, you're doing great things, you're doing great things, but it's still not good enough for me. I actually want to see change in this world. Next time I come back on the show, hopefully the 90-day ceasefire is going to be going on at that particular time, and hopefully I will see violence decreasing. And then I could definitely answer that question and say, well, my biggest accomplishment is shaking off some violence in this particular city. But for right now, I've been doing this since I was 10 years old, but I still don't think I'm capable enough to answer that question for you. I think I'm not ready yet.
Okay.
But I need to continue to do more work.
Mary, let me just say this to you on that note. I'm 50 now, okay? Just had my 50th birthday February of this year, and I've been doing this work, I can say in my head, since I was 4, but I can say where I was actually able to do, where I was allowed to actually do some physical actual work impact was at the age of 16. And when you say that, you know, when you feel, if you have touched, let me just put it like this, if you have changed or touched one person's life to change for the better, then that's a huge, phenomenal accomplishment, because some people take a lifetime, spend a lifetime trying to reach one and never can reach one. And I give you an example of the young lady when I first spoke to you that you had on the phone that were experiencing some problems within her home. You helped her. So a lot of times it doesn't have to be in huge and large numbers, because when you help one, this is my saying, when you can reach one, then that one trickles down to thousands. So that one who has crossed your path, it trickles down to thousands. And I can honestly say that from the first time that we spoke to you with my grandsons, that you have really inspired and encouraged them. And let me tell you something. For me, being a grandmother and being someone that has dedicated their life to this work, I think that you're doing a phenomenal job. And no, we are the last ones to pat ourselves on the back, because we do feel that enough is not enough. We can never do enough. That's the way that we feel. But I just want you to know that your biggest accomplishment is right here in this room right now. This is one of your big accomplishments, because you had helped a grandmother, you know, someone that is raising sons. You have helped me to encourage my grandsons to keep moving and keep striving, that they're in the right direction. So your encouragement, okay, has made a huge impact. So when you say that you feel that you haven't done, I understand, because I felt that way myself, and I still feel that way at times. But also, we still have to be reminded that those that we did touch, that is your greatest achievement. That is your greatest accomplishment. And if you leave this world today or tomorrow, you can rest assured that there are lives that you did touch, and you're touching them every day. I'm sure people that's listening now, that you have touched their lives to be about making change, even adults. So you have made a huge contribution, especially for a young lady your age. So I say that to say to you, we're never going to feel that we have done enough. But I want you to know that you are. You're on the right track. We respect you. That's why I had to get you back on the show, because I want to support you. And when Jacqueline told me about what you were doing, I quite didn't understand it. I didn't understand what you were doing. And now I get a better understanding of it. And then you can't speak on things unless you know. So now I can speak on your behalf and to have everyone else encourage other young people and adults to get behind you and support you in these efforts and support us, and where we have to shake off the violence. So our listening audience, we want you to know that we want you to support young people. If you're listening, we want you to get in touch with Mary Pat Hector. You can check her out on Facebook, and she's also going to give you her contact information. Remember, this is 11-11-2011, Shake Off the Violence, and we want young people. And she also said that entails within the way that you speak to one another, the way that you conduct yourself with one another, with your peers, your mothers, your fathers, your teachers, to be respectful, because disrespect is a form of violence as well, because we can put violence on someone's interpersonal where you don't see it on the outside, but now we're taking that violence and people are keeping it in their heart, and our young people are being hurt by one another. So I'm so proud of you, Mary, by you bringing the young people together, bringing this awareness, and now you have just gotten two young men involved, and they're fired up about you. So I want to thank you for coming on and sharing with
thank
us
you.
The information. Mary, before we go, can you give everyone your contact information, please?
Yes. You all could always Facebook me at Mary Pat Hector, or you could contact me at 678-508-7163.
And
you can always go to our website, www.youthinactionusa.com. But
it's
being updated right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much,
I just
Mary.
I just wanted to share real quick, Rashida, the press conferences are going to be held in different cities at 10 a.m. It definitely will be Atlanta, New York, and a couple other cities. At 10 a.m. in Atlanta, 10:30 a.m. in New York. And we're working right now to stream them so that the people who can't attend, they can still watch the press conference. And we are going to speak with Queen Mother at the House of Umoja tomorrow to see if everybody can come there to watch the press conference. And Mary Pett has also, on her own, contacted Queen Mother to partner with her to use the Imani Pledge.
Beautiful. Well, we, Jacqueline, you know how I feel about Queen Mother. And if anyone
yeah.
knows, Queen Mother is with the House of Umoja. She's a, I call her a shero here in Philadelphia. Really, she should be a shero all over the world because she has done some phenomenal work with gang violence and stopping violence here in Philadelphia, something that no one else was able to do, but this woman and her husband, single-handedly, I'm sure with the help of others, but they were the spearheads behind this to reduce the violence in Philadelphia. So, Mary Pat, you definitely teamed up with the right woman there, the best example. I mean, that Jacqueline, you did a wonderful job hooking up with Queen Mother. That is beautiful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to go. It was wonderful having you on the flip side. We want you to come back. We want you to let your friends know to tune in, support Abdul, and support Zion. These are young advocates, young African-American boys who are going to be men, and they need your support. They need you to call in. They need you to tune in. They need you to tell your friends that the second Tuesday of every month, we need you to tune in to the flip side on Blog Talk Radio. I want to give a shout-out to all my friends, the NECC Collaborative, and you all are going to be hearing about that soon, about Black Male Achievement. I want to thank my husband, my family, Jacqueline Taylor Adams, Mary Pat Hector, Dr. Eugene Richardson, and all our listeners. And Jacqueline, as we do again, we close out, because I'm so thankful to the wonderful things that God has done for me in my life, and the wonderful, wonderful blessing he has bestowed upon me with these wonderful two African-American young boys that are really striving for success, and I need you all to support them because it does take a village, and we all a village, and we are our brother's keeper. And Jacqueline Taylor Adams, I want to say thank you. I love you. Once again, you have been listening to The Flip Side. We are moderator, Ms. Rashida Jabbar. Your two beautiful, wonderful co-hosts, Zayn and Abdul Shaheed. We want to thank you, and I also want to give a shout-out, which he's not listening, to my son, Roscoe P. Colchain. I love you, and just keep praying. Things are going to get better. Everyone, on the flip side, stop the violence, keep it moving. Jacqueline Taylor Adams, please close us out with this beautiful song, Thank You. Thank you.
Thank you.